With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Seventh inning stretch. I'm Justin Wells. With me, as always, is Armando Agulo. Today is our last show of the year because we take off on various vacations. Not that we don't like you guys and we don't want to be with you, but you know we need a few weeks off from our lives. Speaking of a few weeks off from our lives, Armando, how much can you not wait for that?
Oh man, I am so excited to just get out of here. I'm going to take a little bit out of your book, and I'm going to go to Tulum too at the end of next month. So. I really can't wait, to be honest.
Yeah, that should be a good trip. Not as needed from you in California because it's not quite as cold, but still definitely needed.
Yeah, just to get away from work. And I hear you're going to India, so that should be interesting and a lot of fun for you.
I leave on Friday, but let's bring it back to our main topic because this is the seventh inning stretch and not Justin Armando's travel stories. But we could give you guys that once if you want it, but. It's the end of the year and the winter meetings just ended. So we're going to talk those. I think the first deal we should go to, and the biggest deal of anybody made in the winter meetings, was the Boston Red Sox acquiring Chris Sale for a package that includes Yoan Moncada, the number two prospect in Baseball America's prospect list, and Michael Kopech, who is a young pitcher who looks very Noah Syndergaard-esque, and I'll get to that in a minute. But I guess first, Armando, what do you think about Chris Sale going to the Red Sox?
I mean, Chris Sale is going to help the Red Sox without a doubt. They're a team that was already offensively, they didn't struggle last year. They were very offensive heavy, and I just think if they can get anything out of David Price, Porcello can be anything like he was this season. The Red Sox are really a force to be reckoned with, and we can see them playing deep into October. And I think that's a move that they had to make because, we know Dombrowski and we know his MO, and that is get rid of the farm to win now. And we're just seeing that play over and translate from his time in Detroit now over here in Boston. For me, I think it's a deal that will probably long-term benefit both teams because I think the White Sox really got two can't-miss players in Kopech and Moncada, like you mentioned. So it's exciting, I think, for both teams. I think the White Sox needed that. They needed to blow it up and they needed to rebuild, and they're doing it in a way that I think is exciting, and it'll be quicker than most teams that are rebuilding have to go through. I really do think these two pieces are going to be key pieces for them going forward. And to be quite honest, as early as next season, we can see, them start to gain the fruits of this trade. So it's something that I think is going to go 50-50. And I think it was a good trade all around. But, the Red Sox got a really, really good pitcher, a pitcher that with that offense can win 20 games without a problem. And Chris Sale, if he can keep his head on straight, he can be a definite, beneficiary of that offense and really, do great things for Boston. Because I really do think it's not like he's coming from the NL and he's not used to it. He's going into a league where he's used to. I know the AL East is a little bit tougher. It's more offense heavy, but, he's got dynamic stuff. And really, we've seen him dominate the American League for quite some time. So, I'm really excited to see it. I don't know about you know, the rest of the American League East, but I think it's going to be an exciting time for the Red Sox.
Yeah, so it's actually interesting that you bring up in the AL East, because just looking at what he did last season against the AL East, one start against Baltimore, won it, went five innings, giving up one earned. Against Boston, also had one start, went seven innings, struck out nine, one earned. Against the Rays, had two starts, won them both, 16 innings, 16 strikeouts, and three earned over the 16. And a mirrored 16 innings against Toronto, 13 strikeouts, three earned, and two wins. So you're talking about a guy who pitched to a sub 1.5 ERA, or just, I think it works out just around 1.5 in the division that he pitched it, that he's in the position in the division that he's pitching in next season. I know that obviously that's a circumstantial stat, but it doesn't suggest that he's going to struggle, because none of those teams thus far have made too many changes in their lineup. I mean, bar Toronto without Encarnacion and Bautista, and we don't know how they end up. But the other question I want to pose to you, and I get why the Red Sox would make this trade, but Yoan Moncada is a guy that typically, like, you don't trade that guy. You're looking to trade the next guy down in your farm system. Do you think he was blocked in Boston in any way?
Possibly. I mean, you know, Boston has a lot of talent, and you know, Xander Bogaerts is there, and they have some players that really do fit the bill. Moncada, although he's an extremely talented player, and it's like you said, most teams, that's untouchable. You're not getting Moncada without a shadow of a doubt. That's a player that you're grooming and you're going to get in there. I just think it's Dombrowski, man. Dombrowski wants the proven commodity. He doesn't really trust what the farm has and what potential has to say. He's the guy that wants the proven entity, and Chris Sale is that, and that was the weakest link for the Red Sox. Was he blocked? I think maybe, potentially, but I just think that's a situation where the patience wasn't there, and it was the perfect storm for him to go because of the general manager and the way he operates, and because of, you know, the depth that the Red Sox do have. So I just think, you know, in any other organization, they could have worked it out. They could have fit him in a different position. He could have played somewhere else. They would have made it work. But I just think with the Red Sox, it was a piece that they felt could get their man. And then it ultimately did.
Yeah, no, I fully see it. Like you mentioned Porcello and Price. I think Sale gives them finally the protection that they needed against those two pitchers. And it's going to sound strange to say that, because you're talking about the richest pitcher contract in the free agent baseball market history, because obviously Price is not making as much as Kershaw, although I think the AAV is bigger, and your reigning Cy Young winner. You'd expect that you wouldn't need to supplement a staff like that with an actual ace, but there are questions about Porcello and how much he'll regress the next year. Like, Porcello won 22 games this year. He pitched to an ERA just under 3.3, which in the AL is great. Like, do you think that's really, realistic again? I don't.
Probably not. I mean, winning games, I could see him winning 18, 19 games, but that's just because the Red Sox are offense heavy and they have a talented lineup, so I could see him doing that. The ERA, however, is something that I don't expect him to get. I could see him, you know, getting up to a 4, 4.5 next season easily, just because of the division he plays in, just because, you know, it's in, you know, we live in the era of analytics and people are constantly studying pitcher, constantly studying the things that they're doing. And I think, you know, he's going to get figured out. Porcello, although he's a guy that's been in the league for quite some time, last season it seemed like guys weren't really prepared to see what he had to offer. And I just think it's, if his game evolved, then now the hitter's game will evolve. And I just think it's to the point where he's going to get found out. I mean, we've seen pitchers time and again, David Price is a prime example of this, get found out and regress. And you know, Porcello is going to have a target on his back. He's Cy Young Award winner. And I don't really see him repeating that and having his name, you know, in that conversation. Chris Sale, on the other hand, is somebody that can be in that conversation next season, without a doubt.
Yeah, no, I happen to agree with you. And I think that the haul to the White Sox, it set the price for prospects, because we're going to stick with the White Sox. And we're going to talk about the trade that they made with the Washington Nationals. So the Nationals traded away Lucas Giolito, the number one ranked prospect in baseball, number one pitching ranked prospect in baseball. Reynaldo Lopez, who made some starts for them and is also their second best prospect in their system. And then Dane Dunning, their first rounder from 2 years ago, who's the fourth best prospect in their system, for Adam Eaton. Adam Eaton's a nice player, but I'm killing the Nationals for this deal.
Yeah, the Nationals got fleeced, bro. It is what it is. Adam Eaton is a solid ball player. But he's not next level. He's not superstar. He's not what the potential that they gave up is for this guy. I mean, I don't know what his WAR is, but it can't be that great. He's an average center fielder at best.
Adam Eaton last year actually put up a 6.2 WAR, but a lot of it was because of the effect of his defense in right field versus center field. 6.2 right. WAR players, no joke. It's really solid.
Yeah, no, and I'm surprised they didn't give away this haul for McCutcheon. If you were going to go get a center fielder, and you're willing to give up that much, Andrew McCutcheon's proven to be, two, three times the player Adam Eaton is at least, and defensively, right, and defensively solid, and a guy that can command that position. That it just doesn't make sense to me. It seems quite obvious that the Pirates are willing to ship McCutcheon for the right deal, and I can't see that not being enough for Andrew McCutcheon.
Apparently they turned down a package around Giolito and Lopez. The Nationals really struck out, by the way, in trades that they wanted to make because this was their third choice trade. They went first for apparently Sale, couldn't land him. Then they went for McCutcheon, couldn't land him. And it looks like they got played by the White Sox once in the Sale deal, where the night before John Heyman was tweeting that they were apparently close to a deal between the Nats on Sale. It even had Noah Syndergaard pissed off, but that's something I learned via Twitter. Then the Red Sox come in and make the trade. So apparently they were able to top the Nats offer because the Red Sox have a better farm system. And then they get played by the White Sox on this haul of giving up, their three best pitching prospects for a guy who is a very, very good and above average in right field as a defender and a full player. But then you move him into center field and the defensive qualities that he brings to you as a right fielder disappear.
Yeah, no, I agree with that 100%. I mean, and Comiskey or U.S. Cellular, I don't know what it's called anymore.
Guaranteed that place, ballpark.
Oh, yeah. No, that's very forgettable. For me, that place it has a lot of ground to cover, man, and he's going to have to command a lot of that outfield, and I just don't know, man. I think it's definitely not going to be something that looking back, we're going to sit here and say, man, Adam Eaton, it's a great thing that he, they got him. And yeah, it was worth the price. I don't really see that happening. But for the White Sox, again, I mean, kudos to them again, getting young pieces, getting pieces that are not far from being major league ready. If not, they'll be there in spring, potentially be there to start the season. These are guys that I think could really benefit them. And they are getting top, dollar for these guys. And for players that, for me, aside from Sale, everybody on the White Sox is replaceable, and even for Sale, he's gone now. And he was just there stagnating. It wasn't going to improve the situation keeping him there. So him moving is an absolute must do. But nobody on that roster screams, perennial all-star, screams Hall of Fame, screams elite, and now they got some potential pieces that could be just that in a year, 2 years time, even, because I mean, Moncada's not far away and he's going to be there soon. And he's going to be a key piece in that lineup. He's going to be a key piece in that franchise for quite some time. For me, this Adam Eaton move, man, just doesn't make any sense for me as far as the Nationals are concerned, but for the White Sox, you'd bite the Nationals' hands off for offering that immediately.
Yeah, and it seems like they did. Now, moving away from, because actually, before we move away from that deal, let's actually see what it does for the Nats for a second. So you have Adam Eaton in center. That's going to allow them to move Trey Turner to his natural position as short. There is one thing, obviously, as a fan of a team in that division, which, if you're listening to us for the first time, I'm a New York Mets fan and I don't hide it. It's the top of that lineup with Eaton and Trey Turner is going to have so much speed in front of, in front of Murph and in front of Harper. I do think it makes him way too left-handed, though.
Yeah, it's all about Dusty Baker pulling the strings and making the moves and not being afraid to hit and run, to steal, to do these things. I just think, sometimes he can be a little hesitant in the way he calls the game, and we've seen that especially in the playoffs. So for me, it gives you that ability. But they really need to make that work, and they really need to put the ball in play and get the most out of these guys. We got to hope that Eaton has a great on-base percentage for them, at least. So I don't know. I think everything's up in the air with that trade. I, I, you know, I think, you know, they lost some pieces to the Nationals, not just in their farm, but Wilson Ramos is a big piece for them that's missing now. I just think that this team got worse and might have regressed a little bit to what we saw, you know, definitely a couple years ago. But yeah, even last season.
Yeah, it's one of those things I wonder about also, because they've sold a lot of their pitching depth. Lopez and Giolito made starts for this team last year. Death Taxes and Steven Strasburg on the DL is, you know, what you're dealing with. So while you have the reigning Cy Young Award winner in Scherzer, an undeserving winner, by the way, you have Strasburg as well, who, you know that Strasburg's going to be good when he pitches, but you also know that he's going to miss a month of the season. And, you know, you're hoping that Joe Ross keeps up what he did. You're hoping that Tanner Roark keeps up what he did. You're probably slotting Gio Gonzalez in. So you have a set five that you're working with, but you have some guys who are going to go down with injury during the course of the season. It happens to every other staff. And the question for them now is, where does that depth come from, and where does the depth and quality come from if they suffer a long-term injury, which we all also seen happen with pitchers?
Yeah, you know, especially with you know, guys like Strasburg, who, like you said, at least a month of the season, it's almost guaranteed he'll be gone. Yeah, and giving up those elite prospects, you know, it just was going to make it difficult for them. It's going to make it very difficult for them. They better hope that they could make it, you know, up to the trade deadline, something like that, to where if they need to make a move, they can. But I don't know. I just see this team, you know, really regressing and scuffling for, if there's injuries, especially into that rotation. I think this is a team that might scuffle for you know, a lot of next season.
I still think there's too much talent in the division they play in, has a lot of crap outside them in the Mets. So I think they're going to beat. I think they'll feast. But the way the Nationals have been over the last few years, it's good year, bad year, good year, bad year. And they're due for a bad year. Consistency they've had trouble with being consistent and getting out of the first round of the playoffs. They haven't had trouble getting out of the first round of the playoffs. They just don't do it. It's part of their thing is they don't get out of the first round of the playoffs. Like the Nats, you know, they lose in division series. That's just what they do.
Right. No, I tend to agree with that, Ben. I tend to agree with that 100%. I guess we'll just wait and see. And you know, it's like you said, there is a weak division there. You know, Murph has to be Murph again from last season. I don't know if he can duplicate that. He's a great hitter, but last season was just, you know, his numbers were astronomical.
They were, but Harper had as below his historical line season as Murph had as above his. So I kind of see those just both kind of evening out to exactly where they probably should be.
No, that's a good point. That's a very good point. Yeah. Right on.
But moving away from the Nats, let's talk about the team that knocked him out of the playoffs, the Los Angeles Dodgers. Dodgers apparently are making some news early in the offseason as for the first time they were not going to be, in the past few years, a huge player in free agency, because MLB really wants them to pay down some debt and also hike the luxury tax to punish teams like the Dodgers a bit more for, you know, going well above the thresholds that other teams can afford. That hasn't stopped them from spending money to bring back two players who have been very good for them lately. First, giving Kenley Jansen a 5-year, $80 million contract. Huge for a closer, but not the biggest contract for any closer on the market. And then Justin Turner progressing towards a 4-year deal. Justin Turner and Daniel Murphy, two former Mets who turned into phenomenal power Brett after leaving the Mets. But let's start with Turner. Are you in favor of giving this guy this much money over that much time?
Yeah. I mean, Justin Turner kind of earned it. He's kind of become part of, you know, the heart and soul of this ball club. He's definitely somebody that you know, the guys really gather around. The fans really have taken to Justin Turner. It's nice to see a guy grind his whole career and finally get a payday. I mean, he was overlooked by the Mets. He was overlooked by quite a few teams. And we gave him an opportunity, and he ran with it. He took the position. He you know, Justin Turner batting third for the Los Angeles Dodgers was not something that anybody could have ever imagined. And he did it. He did a great job. He's somebody that I think this team can be comfortable with. I think for us, we're a team that isn't far. So to start giving away some pieces that are really important to us, like Jansen, like Turner has been for the last few seasons, what he does in that clubhouse, what it means for him even to be a Dodger. I know that, you know, he didn't really want to leave, as Jansen didn't want to leave. And that says a lot about the organization. I'm totally okay with it. I mean, the Dodgers are a team that we gave Carl Crawford a buttload of money. We paid Andre Ethier pretty okay. you know, so Justin Turner is absolutely worth it. You know, and then not to forget Rich Hill. I mean, Rich Hill coming back is big for us. We're paying him handsomely as well. He's up there in age, and then health is always a concern with Rich Hill. But if he can stay healthy and really, you know, contribute a lot of innings to this ball club, I think that's where we saw a lot of things happen in a negative way for the Dodgers, is our pitching staff wasn't able to be healthy. So we used so many pitchers. The bullpen was overused. And by the time we got to the playoffs, we were kind of spent. So I think Rich Hill, that's an addition that's going to make a huge difference. But for me, Kenley Jansen was an absolute must. If it wasn't going to be him, then we were going to have to overspend somewhere else for something less talented. It's nice to see him be loyal and committed to the Dodgers and then take less money to what even the Nationals or the Marlins were offering him. So for me, you know, I couldn't be happier with what's going on. We're also in discussions, and then there's rumors that Dozier from the Twins, he only makes $6 million a year. If we could get him and he can be the second baseman for us and give, you know, even two-thirds of the season he had last year to us, then we're going to be in good shape. So I kind of am, you know, liking what we're doing. We're not overspending outside of what we're familiar with, and that's okay, because at least I know what to expect out of these guys. And we weren't far. We haven't been far for quite some time. We just need to really keep the core together and find a piece that could get us over that hump. And I think that it's out there, and I think that, you know, our front office is a bunch of smart dudes, so I think they're really going to figure it out, and they'll make the moves necessary to get us over that hump. You know, for us, it's just key is staying healthy, especially in the rotation. If we can stay healthy, then our team is going to be in the hunt and in the thick of it, you know, as we have been for the last couple of seasons. So, yeah, I'm excited for what's happening, and I'm pretty happy, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're all moves that make sense. You know, the only thing I worry about with the Dodgers is being, you know, like I worry about with the Mets, and like I think the Nats should worry about, is they're way too left-handed. The Dodgers ranked last in batting average against lefties last year. They had trouble in the playoffs when they faced John Lester. I mean, that's basically where I would, that's where I'd go with that, is they need to work on facing lefties, because in their division, you face, you have the best one, but you face the second best one in the game. And, you know, you have Kershaw, but you face Madison Bumgarner a lot.
Yeah, no, and you know what? Justin Turner struggled against lefties last season. That's why I think a player like Dozier would make sense for us, you know, giving us an offensive threat at a position where, you know, we're pretty bare right now. And he can hit the lefties. He's right-handed. He gives you a little bit of power. I think that we are left-handed, you know, overly left-handed, but I think those are things that can be rectified. You know, if Scott Van Slyke can be healthy, and you know, and Puig can have a good, like he did when he came back after being demoted, he can give me some consistency. I think we can platoon enough to where we can hit lefties better. You know, for me, my main concern is health, especially in the rotation. I think offensively we're going to be good enough. I think in the bullpen we're going to be good enough. I just think if we can't stay healthy, then we're going to have major issues again going deep into the playoffs. It's not about winning the division. It's not about getting a wild card spot for the Dodgers anymore. I mean, as a Dodger fan, you're expecting that. And I know that sounds spoiled to say, but for us, it's next level. It's getting out of the NLCS. It's making it to the dance. And I think health is going to be a major key to that, like it is for any organization trying to get to that point. But we really need to strive to do that. And we really need to keep our depth, you know, our pitching depth where it is. I mean, Ryu coming back, McCarthy coming back. There's some pieces that I can be excited about. You know, as far as the offense is concerned, I'm confident we'll make enough changes, and I'm confident Dave Roberts can tweak it enough to make us productive against left-handed pitchers.
Yeah, no, I can't agree more, especially on the fact that you needed Turner back. He's the star that draws the stink, stirs the drink. But moving off of the team that's re-signed Kenley Jansen, let's stick with the closer market. The record contract for a closer, of course, the New York Yankees signing Roldis Chapman to a 5-year, $86 million contract. This is crazy money, and I don't think I like it.
I don't think I like it either. Well, ultimately, neither one of us like Chapman for off-the-field issues, so it's hard for us to be able to swallow him getting that much money.
Oh, no, the playoffs made me kind of hate him for on-the-field issues.
So. You know what? For me, it's just the Yankees are going to be the Yankees. You know what I mean? They're going to do what they're going to do. And having a star closer has always been part of their, you know, MO, and then it's no different now. I think they overspent, but that's just me. I mean, I know you agree with that.
Of course they overspent on him. I mean, I mean, and it set the market for closers was set early, and it was set before Jansen and Chapman signed. It was set when the Giants chose to sign Melanson, the worst of the three, but Melanson had the highest annual average value of any relief pitcher ever for about a week. And then the Yankees set that market again with Chapman at $17.2 million, followed by Melanson's getting $15.5 million, and Jansen fits slots in nicely at $16 million. I mean, two of these guys are two of the three, I would say, elite closers in baseball in Jansen and Chapman. And the other guy that, you know, I think is the other elite guy in the game right now, obviously, is Zach Britton. But the guy who's right behind them also is on the move this week. The Chicago Cubs trading Jorge Soler. He makes actually a perfect post-high sleeper, by the way. I think that the Royals got a good player in him, or a potential for a good player in him, for Wade Davis. That's another huge deal. The Cubs also signing Koji Uehara, immediately going back to work on just rebuilding that bullpen.
Yeah, the Cubs haven't skipped a beat. And like you said, Jorge Soler for Wade Davis, that's another deal that I like for both teams. Jorge Soler has the potential to be, you know, all-star quality player if he can get the at-bats and he can stay healthy and really, stay consistent. You know, for me, the Chapman deal, what bothers me the most is he's not an Andrew Miller. He's not a Kenley Jansen who's willing to go and pitch two innings, three innings, who's willing to go and pitch the seventh, even in a tight ball game where we're seeing all these pitchers shift. Aroldis Chapman doesn't strike me like that kind of guy. He strikes me as a give me the ball in the ninth when we have a lead, and that's about it. And I think, you know, for that money, you definitely have to be a little more flexible, or I would demand that my pitcher be a little bit more flexible.
No, I would too, but the other thing is, though, it allows the Yankees to rebuild a 1-2 punch that they had earlier in the season when they were using before Chapman was activated from his suspension of Dellin Betances and Andrew Miller, you know, just elite power guys late in a game. If you get a lead, you don't relinquish it. And now the Yankees have a form of that again with Betances and Chapman. The issue that the Yankees have is that Joe Girardi abuses relievers. And do you want to see a manager abusing a reliever that's making $17.2 million a year? Or do you want that guy fresh to pitch every night? Like, you don't want to destroy your investment.
No, I hear that. I think the Yankees are in a position where they definitely have to scrape by and win more games and really make a push this season, more so than last season. I know that they came off a little bit strong towards the end when Gabby Sanchez caught fire, but they definitely need to reestablish themselves in a division where they have been losing ground for a few seasons now. And so I can't see Girardi not forcing the issue. You know what I mean? I could see Girardi wearing him a little bit thin in non-safe situations because that's just the way Joe Girardi works, man.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Now, the other thing that I find interesting on this is just Jansen and Chapman. The two contracts they just signed, which will cover just the next 5 years, are as much as Mariano Rivera made in 19 seasons. I like both pitchers, but no, they're no Rivera.
No, they're not.
No one is.
But, you know, the game has changed so much. Contracts have evolved so much. Thanks to Mariano Rivera and him laying the foundations, that position in the reliever role has gained so much more credibility and importance in the game. We saw that a few years ago with the Royals. We saw that with the Indians. We're seeing that with the Cubs. We're seeing that a lot of teams are built, you know, through the bullpen and because of players like Mariano Rivera. So although he didn't get paid as much as these guys are getting paid, it wouldn't be possible without people like Mariano, to be quite honest.
Yeah. Yeah, I just found that as an interesting financial stat because I've always thought, you know, Mariano he's the best pitcher as far as overall effectiveness in the single role that you needed him to do that I've ever seen, especially when it comes to the postseason. And I always thought he was undervalued, but this particular deal made me understand exactly how undervalued he was. But that's enough of me complimenting the New York Yankees. Let's go to another franchise that frustrates me, the St. Louis Cardinals. Finally address the gaping hole they've had in center field by signing Dexter Fowler.
Yeah, and prying him from the Cubs. So that's a win-win for them. I was kind of surprised that Fowler went to the Cubs. I mean, went to the Cardinals from the Cubs. But, you know, he's a guy that turned down some money and you know, a few years with the Orioles to go to the Cubs and gamble on himself. And it worked out for him. World Series champion with the Chicago Cubs. And not just that, he earned himself a very nice lucrative payday with the Cardinals. He's a player that's going to help them tremendously, help them defensively, help them offensively. He's just you know, a spark plug to any lineup. And I think, you know, the Cardinals have needed a little bit of that. They've stagnated a little bit over the last couple of seasons, especially last year. I feel like the Cardinals just couldn't get it going offensively and really sputtered for, you know, the majority of that season.
Yeah. Now the question here is, do you buy the diff? Because his defense was always suspect in center last year. It was really, really good. Do we buy it? He's said in the past, it's due to the Cubs positioning him differently this season, last season, than ever before, and that allowed him to get to balls better. I don't know enough to actually say whether or not I agree with that, but I'm always suspect of guys who have 1 year spikes in one skill where they've always been mediocre.
Yeah, but I think, you know, if he's saying that the scouting, the positioning, I don't doubt it at all because the Cubs are the king at that, right? But it's also about confidence. I think he's grown in confidence in his position. He's grown in confidence in his ability to go out there and get it. And for me, that's something big that no one could really take away. You know, if he feels that he's improved and the Cardinals feel as much, I think it's not just that, but it's taking him from your direct rival that makes this deal so, you know, such a big deal to me. It's taking a key piece to a team that we know is proven and world championship caliber, that's your direct rival, and plugging him into a position that, you know, you need him to succeed at. And I think that he's a player that can succeed. I don't think that, you know, new Bush is that massive. I think he can go out there and get it. I'm not too concerned by the defensive issues, man. I think that he's got those sorted out, that he could thank the Cubs a lot for that. And if Mike Matheny plays his cards right and does a little bit of analytics and figures out where people spray the ball around, and he feels comfortable and confident in Mike Matheny and that coaching staff's ability to position him, I think he's fine. And not just that, but I think he's gained a lot from the Cubs doing what they did for him. And he's able to, you know, take those pieces and grow himself and learn the game. And he's really evolving into, you know, I don't want to say an elite defender, but a quality above average defender in center field.
Now, here's my question. We're talking about the positioning, but then there's also the thing you have to realize that the Cubs put into right field last year. They put Jason Hayward in right field. He's not playing next to Jason Hayward. Jason Hayward is the best defensive right fielder in baseball. Could that be some of it? It's something to watch. I don't know the answer to it.
No, those are great points that you're bringing up, and I think that's something that we do need to look out for, and we should be watching with a lot of, you know, attention, because it's something that we can bring back in a couple of months or once the season starts and see if it's actually developed, if his game's actually developed, or if there was all those other factors that were really helping him out. And that's something that I'm really, you know, excited to see and find out, because there's a lot of question marks. There's a lot of things that you know, did benefit him in Chicago, and it's time for him to prove his worth and prove that contract is definitely that he's deserving of it.
So of the big position player contracts, we have three left to discuss. I'm going to leave the one that I want to talk about most for last, because it also happened before the winter meetings. I think we all know which one it is. But Wilson Ramos, coming off of a great year for the Washington Nationals, that saw him tear his ACL near the end of the season, signs with Tampa Bay for 2 years at $12.5 million. That one feels like it's a real punch in the gut for the player, because Ramos looked like he was poised to get really good money, and the knee injury couldn't have come at a worse time.
Yeah, it's something that he's probably disappointed in. But, I mean, you know, he took a short-term deal, you know, and then he'll be a key focal point to that team in Tampa. It'll help the Rays. If he can get back to the offensive levels where he was when he went down, then I have no problem or no doubt that he'll get paid down the line. Because, you know, at that position with offensive ability, it's only a plus-plus, and he's a player that's really proven how good he can be with the Nationals. It's just a matter of him staying healthy and really producing, and if he can do that, then he'll be paid down the line. But, yeah, no, I agree 100%. On the short term, it's definitely a punch in the gut for the kid.
Yeah, I mean, he was hitting .307, .354, .496 over 523 plate appearances, finally had his first got his first All-Star games for a Silver Slugger, 3.5 WAR, you know, decent enough defender. It's just he's going to hit the market again at age 31, which is a perilous age for catchers because you're still close enough to your physical peak, but it's also the position in baseball that wears you down fastest. Like, this might have cost Wilson Ramos like his, you know, his real shot at big money, you know, like $50 million plus instead of, you know, taking $12.5 million, and who knows if he ever plays that well again.
No, for sure. Absolutely. I think if he would have stayed healthy, you know, the conversation between the premier catcher and highest paid, you know, between him and Wieters right now in the free agency, it would have been definitely a conversation, and Ramos would have probably been more deserving, in my opinion. But hey, you know, it happens, and it's up to him to go out there and prove that, you know, his injury is not going to define him, and he can actually produce in that way still. And, I'm rooting for the guy because I think he actually has a lot of baseball left in him and really good above average quality, you know, catching ahead of him. So I think that's a good piece for the Rays. You know, I don't expect him to be there long. I expect him to see out the 2 years and probably be gone, if not be trade bait in his second season if he's really producing. So I think it's a good move for both teams. Although he probably is going to be disappointed with the financial figures, it is what it is, you know, with his injury and everything else, it's probably expected. But yeah, no, I'm excited to see how he produces, man, to be quite honest.
And now for the really fun one, because we get to pan terrible decision-making. The Colorado Rockies have signed Ian Desmond at 5 years and $70 million to play first base.
Yeah,
I don't get it. It also costs them the number 11 pick in the draft. Because everything up till 10 is protected. The 11th pick, not so much. This is stupid.
It's stupid. I sat around trying to figure out why this makes sense for the Rockies and why this is a good move. It's just not. I mean, Ian Desmond hasn't played first base for long periods of his career. You know, he's not he can play some outfield. He can play infield. You know, he's a platoon utility type of guy. And to get the amount of money that he got is I don't know. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. You know, he's probably a better defensive outfielder than Carlos Gonzalez. Carlos Gonzalez is left-handed. Play him at first base, give him a shot. They probably have the same amount of experience. There's things that could have been done.
They probably need to take care of Carlos Gonzalez's legs because they're going to consistently fall off.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of things, a lot of factors that don't make sense for me. Ian Desmond is not – they're going to regret this contract. I'm almost positive that they're going to regret this deal, especially with the length of the deal and the – it's just not going to work out. It's just – they need so much more than an Ian Desmond. You know what I mean? Like, especially at that price.
All right, so I have a way of actually making this all work out for him. And I know this will never happen.
All right, shoot.
The Rockies trade Charlie Blackmon to the Mets for Jay Bruce.
God, you're clutching at straws. Go ahead.
Yeah, the reason is the Mets got a center fielder, and this goes to what we're going to discuss in a few minutes, and then Jay Bruce has gotten rid of.
Okay, how does this benefit the Rockies?
It doesn't, but they're stupid, so who cares? No, I mean, Ian Desmond's a nice player, but you just signed a guy who hit 22 and 86, stole 21 bases. Nice player, hit 285 in Texas. Texas doesn't give you that much more of a bump than Colorado does. Like, Colorado doesn't give you that much more of a bump than Texas does as far as offensive stats. And you're paying for that production for a first baseman. Like, it's a first base. Like, if you're in Coors Field and your first baseman isn't hitting 35 to 40 homers, like, doesn't have that power to do that, you're wasting the position there. Like, you put power hitters at the corners.
You're doing it wrong. Yeah. I completely agree.
And he's a subpar defender in a lot of spots.
A lot of spots. I mean, he could play a lot of spots, but he plays them poorly for the most part. I don't know, bro. None of it makes sense to me. I think they're really reaching, and, you know, I know it's hard to be a destination in Colorado because you're not a proven winner. You don't have much to build on. You don't attract key free agents. It's just, this doesn't make any sense. And they got him so early on in the off season. It's like, they just reached, bro. There's no other explanation I have except for they reached for this.
I don't mind Desmond. I just think he is a tremendously average player. And I think giving him that much money, I mean, you're talking about a guy who, you know, weighted runs created 106. Decent. Average for weighted runs created, by the way, is 100. 106. Decent. Sorry, I'm thinking of OPS+. Sorry, I'm confusing stats in my head. But 100 runs created plus puts you basically probably around like midway through regulars in Major League Baseball. You don't pay a guy like that $16.5 million a season, $15 million a season. You don't. It's just that you don't pay that money to that guy.
No, you don't. And that's another guy that took a short-term deal to take a gamble on himself, and that paid off huge for that guy. So, you know, more power to him.
It was after turning down a $100 million deal. So, like, there's a little bit of a redemption for Ian Desmond. It's just the question is whether or not it's, you know, deserved it that much. But, you know, good for Ian Desmond.
No, 100%. Good for him. Good for his agent. Way to do the job.
And before we get to our mailbag, we should bring up the fact that there are two huge names still on the free agent market. And one of them, I got to get into a quote from Jim Duquette on, but they're Joey Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion, you know, the twin bombers from Montreal. Encarnacion is an absolutely lethal bat.
Man, you love the Expos. Montreal? You mean Toronto?
I'm in Toronto. I'm in Toronto. I do love the Expos.
I
hate the Expos.
I know you
love
do.
The Expos. I went to the last game in Expos franchise history, by the way. It was in New York. I didn't travel. Then Joey Bautista, the GM for the Baltimore Orioles, Jim Duquette, went out of his way to tell Joey Bautista's agent that his team couldn't sign him because their fans hated him.
I laughed. I thought that was funny. I mean,
I did too, but you don't let the inmates run the asylum.
No, I get that 100%, and I can all, you know, 100% understand why Oriole fans hate Joey Bats. But God, the fact that that made the news was hilarious. Like, you don't go out of your way as a general manager and just say things like that publicly. So it is what it is. I think Joey Bats ends up in Toronto for way less than, or at least less length than he really wanted. But it suits him. It's home. That's where he flourished. His career flourished. I think he'd be dumb to really go anywhere else because no one's going to give him what he wants anyway.
Yeah. So I agree with you that he ends up probably back in Toronto. I don't see both of them ending up back in Toronto, and that's where I think the Blue Jays take a hit. I just wonder though, who is going to take on Encarnacion? And the question is, how much money do you have to give these guys? Because the market was probably set by Cespedes, right? Like, you have to figure that the guy who's youngest and most in his prime and probably best of the three is going to set the market. Cespedes took a shorter deal. Granted, he also took the second largest annual average value of any player who isn't Miggy Cabrera. But, I mean, are either of those teams going to go over what Cespedes got in terms of years or dollars?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think there's any team that would do that for those guys.
Right? And Cespedes plays some defense. You know what I mean? He offers something. Jose Bautista doesn't play that great a defense. He's and they're both predominantly DHs. I mean, Edwin Encarnacion played first base a lot, but he's not that great. So predominantly these guys got to be American League players, so that already cuts the market in half. It's gonna be tough. I just think they're gonna have to settle. They're gonna definitely have to settle. And I mean, the Blue Jays already signed Kendrys Morales, so that's something that absolutely puts Encarnacion out of play for them. I'm gonna be surprised to see where he goes, because I don't really see a lot of teams willing to spend that much money. And if they are, then they're not really going to be contenders, because I don't see the contenders really throwing that much money at Edwin Encarnacion, because it's just a big gamble. You know, he doesn't offer that much aside from just raw power and offensive numbers, but you know,
there's a lot of teams that would want 40 homers and 125 RBIs.
I understand that, bro, but you know, for the amount of money that he's asking for and the length, I don't know. He's just going to have to settle. He's going to have to take that short deal. He's going to have to and hope that he plays out his mind, and he might have to do that for the rest of his career. Really, is just play these short-term deals. I know that they hate him as ball players, and I would hate it too, because he wants some security, but unfortunately, you know, all of his other intangibles don't add up to giving this man, including his age, including his defensive ability, including his lack of speed, his lack of a lot of things. Yeah, he hits a lot of home runs. He drives in a lot of runs. I get it. There's a place for that in the game, and there always will be. But I just think it's in a designated hitter role, and he, you know, he might end up in Anaheim for all we know. That would be amazing.
Having him in Pujols, basically, where one of them has to play first base by default.
It's that type of, that's going to be that type of scenario. He's going to end up at a team where he probably doesn't want to be at, and that are just going to overpay for the short term. And that's fine. But, you know, it's unfortunate for him because I'm sure he would have liked to have stayed in Toronto and finished what they're building there. But it's just, you know, the financials and everything else don't, they just don't add up.
I know where I want him to go, but he doesn't want
where?
To go there. Seattle. That's a team that could actually use him. They can compete next year in that division with him in the lineup.
No, okay. That's a very good shout. That's a very good shout. And we saw that they're not afraid to spend money. They've been a little bit more reluctant this season, but if they can go and spend a little bit of money, and him and Nelson Cruz, Robinson Cano, they can have a little bit of something. Seager? Yeah, no, I can see that working out.
Yeah, I think that would be a good place for him to sign. Now, there's two other more, you know, minor deals that we should briefly talk about. One-year deals to both Carlos Beltran and Matt Holliday. Beltran to go to Texas, to Houston, which we never thought would happen. They could finally stop booing him. I think some fans will still do so. And then we have Matt Holliday finally getting to New York. Not as a Met, though. A lot of Met fans wanted him throughout the course of his career, but as a Yankee. There much to these deals?
Neither one of these two deals excite me. I think, you know, what I found the funniest thing about this is Matt Holliday refuses to go back to Oakland. That's the only team that's no trade clause. That's the best part about either one of these deals to me, is that he just hates Oakland that badly. But no, I mean, if Matt Holliday could stay healthy, he's a piece that can really help the Yankees. I mean, he's not going to be, you know, his numbers aren't going to be astronomical, but he can give you that veteran leadership that McCann, that they lost with getting rid of McCann, and then he could really be a serviceable piece. He, you know, he can play both corner outfield. He can play a little first base. He has some versatility. It's not a move that I hate. It's a move that probably works out for him and for the Yankees. If he can stay healthy, then they definitely got themselves a good leader and a solid ball player still. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm with you. I just don't think he can stay healthy because he's had his injury problems over the last few seasons, and, you know, he's getting up there in age. Beltran, I just love going to Houston just because of the fact that the way in which it ended the last time before 2005 when he signed with the Mets was, you know, nothing but he could have killed a man in Main Street Houston, and they still would have loved him. I'm sorry, I went full Trump there. But but no, that playoff run, the 2004 playoffs, Carlos Beltran, what he put together is the craziest thing until Murph in 2015. Like, it's something that nobody had seen before. And he's got a lot of postseason experience. He's gotten to the World Series a few times. He's just never brought one home. I think Houston gives him a decent shot. I mean, they have a decent shot at winning everything next year. I wouldn't say they're one of my, you know, eight favorites, but I could see them in, you know, in that 8 to 12 range as far as where I'd evaluate teams with the best shots in baseball.
No, they got a shot. I mean, yeah, no, I see it. They got a shot. But for me, I just think it's a matter of just not moving his family again too far from Texas. I mean, from Arlington down to Houston. And then he's been there. He's familiar with the place. You know, I just think it's that type of move. It's more of a family move for him than it is even baseball-wise as far as trying to win anything. I think that ship he feels might have sailed. And, you know, I just think for him, it's probably a familiarity, and it's nice to see him back in Houston. I think he's going to be productive. I think he's going to help, you know, players like Springer, players like Correa, and develop them into better professionals. I think that's the type of move that this is, and I like it. I think that this is going to benefit the Astros long term too, because of what he can pass off to some of these young players.
Yeah, so I'm in full agreement with you there. Finally, we never actually discussed this on the show yet. The week before the winter meetings, the biggest chip on the free agent market did fall. 4 years, $110 million. Yoenis Cespedes goes back to Queens, and I am super pumped about that.
Yeah, you should be. I think for, you know, the Mets, he was a piece that when he got to the Mets, really, you guys were already flying pretty high, but he just turned it on and then really ignited something. And you know, I see it with the fan base, the excitement they have. I see the way that the players really, you know, rally around him and enjoy him there. You know, he's a personality, and New York needs personalities, and he's somebody that has a little bit of that, a little bit of swagger, a little bit of, you know, he has quite a bit of confidence, and he's a player that is still improving, I think. I think he still has something left in the tank, and I think that was a steal for you guys, to be quite honest, and something that you guys had to do.
Yeah, it's the only bat that we know fits with the team because we've seen it. And Sandy Alderson said it in the press conference. There's one simple fact. And you're saying this kind of joking, because the Mets are a very analytics-heavy team at this point with Alderson in charge. One simple fact is that when Yoan Cespedes plays for the New York Mets, the New York Mets win. I'm not going to get too much into what I think it does for the team next season, because there's just a lot of questions about how the pitching comes back healthy. If it comes back healthy like it was in 2015, the Mets become, you know, a very difficult proposition, because every single, you know, 4 out of 5 nights, and potentially 5 with Zach Wheeler, but with, you know, Syndergaard, Matt Harvey, and DeGrom, they could throw out a pitcher that's better than anything most teams have. Maybe, you know, some teams have one pitcher as good as the four. The four of them, though, when they're on their games, are really good. And we, I'm going to link this out via our Twitter account, but Steven Matz is the most underrated pitcher in baseball, and I'm going to post a Fangraphs article that explains why. But this brings us to our question segment. We have 2 questions, both of them posed to him from my friend Jeff Pierce. You can find him at jpierce37 on Twitter. He does not tweet much. In fact, I think the first things he's tweeted in weeks or months. But his first question is, why do the Mets hate Michael Conforto? And as a follow-up, why do they hate center fielders? These are both great questions.
They are great questions, but I feel like you're better suited to answer them. Far as Conforto is concerned, I like Conforto, so I don't understand either. And the center fielder question is a great question, because I don't remember the last time you had one. So I'll let you answer both of these questions.
So why do they hate center fielders is because they paid Juan Lagares, and then he spent an entire offseason eating. And since then, they haven't felt like replacing him with another center fielder. The assumption was last year it would be a platoon between Lagares and the assumption was it was going to be Cespedes last year, which turned into a terrible idea because Cespedes hates playing center field, and it keeps him, you know, injury prone. Cespedes is an elite defensive left fielder. He is a below average defensive center fielder. Cespedes is going to play in left over the course of this contract, or I'm going to have a heart attack. They need a center fielder. I think Alderson needs that, and I think that's something that he's going to hopefully address in the over the course of the winter. As it appears right now, though, it looks like Curtis Granderson is your starting center fielder for next year, which I'm not thrilled with, because Curtis Granderson at 36 has undoubtedly lost a few steps.
That is not a great center field choice. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and then why do they hate Michael Conforto? It's not that the Mets hate Michael Conforto. It's that Terry Collins is a senile old man and doesn't understand that you can't destroy a player's confidence by never giving him consistent chances to hit lefties or play, despite the fact that you roll a lineup out there for 2.5 months from basically May till about from about mid-May to the trade deadline, and a little actually beyond till Cespedes came back on a road trip from the DL in mid-August. The Mets didn't hit, and it was everybody but Michael Conforto seemed to take the fall for the rest of the team. There's a lot of reasons for that, but Conforto taking the fall for the rest of the team not being able to hit was a tremendous mistake in judgment from Terry Collins, and the Mets need Michael Conforto actually hitting, because he could be a stud. And our final mailbag question of 2017, also from Jeffrey Pierce: do the Philadelphia Phillies have any chance in not finishing dead last in the NL East? Asking for a friend. My answer is, yeah, they do. The existence of the Atlanta Braves should give you some hope that you don't finish in last.
Yeah, we're going to agree with that 100%. I think the Braves and the question marks there, although they did make some moves with veterans like Dickey and Bartolo Colon, and they did improve a little bit. I'm just going to think that there's not enough there. But I don't know, man. It's going to be close. It's going to be neck and neck between those two.
It should be exciting, though, because at least – I mean – and I say exciting, I think it's only exciting to fans of both these teams. If you're going to go out and buy the MLB package, I wouldn't recommend, unless you're a, you know, a Braves or Phillies fan, checking them out too much, because you're going to see a lot of bad baseball played by young kids. But if you're a Phillies fan or a Braves fan, you're also going to get to see a lot of bad baseball played by young kids, which can be exciting sometimes, because you get to see prospects that your team has hyped up for a bit. And, you know, if you're a Phillies fan, you'll get to see J.P. Crawford. You're a Braves fan, you'll get to see a lot of Dansby Swanson. Both should be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, it's always fun to see a team that's rebuilding and see youth out there. I know it can be frustrating sometimes, but they got some pieces. Both of those teams got some pieces that, you know, you could be excited for.
So As we go now towards the end of the year, Armando and I are just going to tell you what we think is going to happen in baseball in 2017. I thought of the question, so Armando goes first.
I really think my Dodgers, it's time. I think I'm expecting them to make it to the World Series. I really think that they're going to turn a corner. They're going to have all the pieces. Hopefully they could stay healthy. They got a manager that I think really can push us over that edge. And yeah, so for me, it'll be the Dodgers making the World Series. And I think it's going to be the Red Sox as well, because I think they made enough moves. Dombrowski's made the moves that he feels is going to do this for him. And hey, the offseason is not over, so they could still improve there. You know, Pablo Sandoval is alive and skinny, so you never know. I think Red Sox-Dodgers is my prediction for 2017.
He does look great, doesn't he?
He does. He does.
He looks
scary.
Like a guy who's getting paid a lot of money to play baseball.
Yeah, who knew?
Who knew? But for me, I think it's that Mike Trout will be the first 40-40 player in baseball since Alex Rodriguez did it a few years ago. I'm really looking forward to see what Mike Trout does for an encore off of this season and every other season that he plays for the rest of his career, because I think we might be seeing the greatest baseball player ever.
I would agree with you. And yeah, no, that's a good shout, because 40-40, it doesn't matter who he plays for, what, you know, who the guy is. It's something that you can root for, something you can get excited about. It's a rarity in the game, and it's something that, unfortunately, although there's guys that can do it, like Bryce Harper himself and a lot of other guys that have the tools to do it, we just don't see a lot of the stolen base happening anymore. So if he can do that, that'll definitely – I mean, he's probably going to be the MVP anyway, but that'll cinch it up for sure.
I don't think a secondary prediction is he doesn't repeat his MVP just because a bunch of writers get, you know, some stick up their ass. But,
hey, man, 40-40, that's MVP. You can't take that.
I agree with you. But that's it from us on the seventh inning stretch this year. Myself, personally, I'd like to wish everybody a happy holidays, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, any other holidays that are celebrated around this time of the year, and a happy new year and a healthy new year to everyone. Yeah, that's it for me.
Yeah, likewise. Just be safe out there. Enjoy your holidays with your loved ones. If you could give a little bit to the less fortunate, let's do that. Everybody, every little bit helps. So yeah, ultimately, that's it for us. We'll see you guys next year, and hopefully it's, you know, a fruitful 2017 for all of us.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently: Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things.
Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.